Welcome to Island Watch, where each episode we explore an island by watching a TV show or a movie. Just sit right back and you'll hear a tale. Hi, I'm Dave Zarg.
And I'm Gemma Voss. And yes, welcome to Island Watch, the podcast that transports you to islands all over the world. If you're up for a getaway, you've come to the right place.
This week, the good ship Island Watch is stopping in at the islands of Grenada, St. Lucia, Dominica, and Antigua via the television cooking show Ainsley's Caribbean Kitchen.
All aboard! We are really going to get around on this episode because our guide is Chef Ainsley Harriott. Here he is now.
For over 50 years, I've been waiting to embark on this culinary journey. It's been a dream of mine ever since I started cooking. Traveling over 4,000 miles to this slice of paradise.
With palm-fringed beaches, aquamarine waters. It's beautiful and it's breathtaking.
But it's got a soul too.
Hot, hot.
A rhythm, attitude.
A Englishman.
I'm like anywhere else in the world. And I'm island hopping through this archipelago on an ultimate culinary exploration.
Jamaica, Grenada, St. Lucia, and many more. Discovering each island's identity. Soaking up the culture and reconnecting with foods that I grew up with.
So, come with me as I cook my way around the Caribbean.
In the series, Chef Ainsley visits 8 islands in 7 countries around the Caribbean. We won't be joining him for his stops in Jamaica or Trinidad and Tobago because we've visited there lately in other episodes of our podcast. Instead, we'll home in on the smaller places where island watches are harder to come by.
Right. We're going to be stopping in at Grenada, St. Lucia, Dominica, and Antigua.
First, though, let's get acquainted with Chef Ainsley.
He's been described as lovable and as having a larger-than-life presence.
Well, he does come across as a pretty jovial fellow.
And he has taken on skills from his parents. His dad was a performer and his mum was a good home cook. Ainsley moved from being a chef in London to the TV world and performing. And actually, it's funny, his first TV role was on the sci-fi cult hit series Red Dwarf. But he soon moved into his presenter groove by becoming the resident chef on a British TV morning show.
He continued to narrow his focus on food shows and became host of Ready Steady Cook and another show called Can't Cook, Won't Cook. Love that one. His cookbooks include Ainsley's Barbecue Bible, and he has his own brand of supermarket foods.
So he's decidedly more about home cooking rather than Michelin star type meals. He's supportive of home cooks and very relaxed in his cooking style. It's something he gives his mum credit for. And he gave a speech at the Oxford Union a couple of years ago that speaks to that.
I'm glad to be sort of part of a generation of chefs that changed people's kind of attitude to food. Yeah, I had the fun way of introducing it. A lot of people need that. They need that kind of thing to happen to break down all those inhibitions, you know what I mean? Or that they get too tight when they cook. And what will people think? We always constantly worry about how people are going to think about tasting our food. We all do it. You take something, you think, oh, what are they going to think? What are they going to say? The reality is that, you know, if you're having a little bit of fun and you're a little bit more relaxed about it, it comes out in your food. Even when I had chefs in my kitchen, I wanted them to be free. I wanted them to sort of just move things. I don't want a robotic person there.
That's some good advice. So now let's follow Ainsley onto our first island of today's visit, Grenada. And I have to admit that I know next to nothing about this island. I vaguely remember the United States invading Grenada in the early 80s. And in researching our little quiz for last week's show, I learned that they have a nutmeg on their national flag.
The country of Grenada consists of the island of that name, as well as a few smaller islands. It's located about 220 kilometers north of Venezuela, just northwest of Tobago.
It's petite as a nutmeg. The total land area is about 350 square kilometers, and the population is about 112,000 people.
Originally occupied by indigenous Arawaks and Caribs, Grenada came under French rule before being ceded to Britain. Independence came in 1974. In 1979, there was a coup and a revolutionary government set up. The American invasion happened in 1983. But that's all in the past. These days, tourism and agriculture are important parts of the economy.
Ainslie gives each island an identifier, and he calls Grenada the Isle of Spice. Grenada's actually second only to Indonesia in the amount of nutmeg it exports. So there's a nice connection you can think of next time you're sipping on a pumpkin spice anything.
And pretty much every episode features a visit to a local market. And in Grenada, he meets with a lovely woman named Margot, who runs a spice stall at the market. She fills him in on what spices are available here.
Hello.
Good morning.
So this is Margot, is it? This is your store? How are you doing?
Yes, I'm doing fine.
Ainslie, how are you doing?
Okay, great to see you.
I can't believe it. You've got such a variety of spices here.
Yes, I have. I have all from different village in Grenada. Different village, yes.
And so why do they call it the Spice Island then?
Well, they call us the Spice Island because of the cinnamon, which is one. Mm-hmm. Our nutmeg. We have a combination of the clove also. Mm-hmm. And we have ginger and we have turmeric. So the tourist said to me one day, when we're coming off the ship, and we get that aroma of the Grenada, that is what we love.
With those kinds of ingredients available, it's no wonder that there's some really great cuisine on the island.
Each episode, Ainslie finds a spot on a beach to set up his cooking table. And when I say on the beach, I mean the ocean is right there. If he needs salt, he could just reach out and toss in a handful of seawater. I don't even understand how he can possibly concentrate with that much gorgeousness close by.
Well, maybe it's because he's contractually obligated to.
Good point. Seriously, it's obvious that he's loving being in the outdoors and in the elements. He cooks in the blazing sun and he's sweating up a storm. He shakes cocktails in the driving rain, but he's got a big smile on his face.
For equipment, he's got a gas burner and a high-speed blender. He periodically dips under the table to wash his hands in what is presumably a bucket of soapy water.
It's just basically a camp kitchen, but with great knives and nice dishware. The point is, it's not fancy, and that's a lot of the show's charm. Ainslie turns out beautiful food in a simple way. Each episode has him preparing a couple of dishes at his tiny beachside kitchen, and these dishes are clearly meant for home cooks who live off the island. He uses what's available, but he's unafraid to add in items like coconut water from a carton or, at one point, canned mushrooms.
He has a bit of a laugh at himself over the canned mushrooms, but fresh ones weren't available because they weren't in season. So, yeah, he's pretty practical in his cooking.
And besides cooking his own dishes at his beach kitchen, in each episode he also meets up with a local chef. The local chef takes the reins and demonstrates food unique to the island. You can try recreating this stuff at home, but I think it'd be a little difficult to get some of the ingredients, and it probably won't taste like the real thing.
Probably not. But it's really interesting to watch the two chefs in the kitchen together. I mean, showing Caribbean ingredients and dishes that you've likely never seen unless you've been on the island or if your family's from there.
On this Grenada episode, he goes to a restaurant to cook with Chef Brian, and they make what Brian describes as Grenada's national dish, oil down.
It looked pretty good, actually. I don't think I've ever seen anyone cut up a breadfruit before, or a dasheen. But those go into a big pot with very green bananas and yam slices.
It's a whole lot of starch, and then the oil. And the oil he uses is coconut oil, which I cook with all the time. So at first I thought, why am I reacting as though it's something I've never seen before? And then I realized it's because the oil was in a bottle and it was completely liquid, whereas my cool Canadian kitchen means I scoop my coconut oil out of the jar.
And I'm guessing your kitchen also isn't open air on a mountainside overlooking the ocean.
Yeah, okay, spoiler alert, it's not. That is another difference. Anyway, the show rotates around these two kinds of kitchen segments. Ainslie on his own on the beach, and then Ainslie spending time with a local chef.
Mm-hmm.
Popcorn is great with a show, but sometimes I want to connect the snacks to the movie just that much more. So I've searched high and low to find the perfect munchies meant exactly for the show we are watching right now, Ainsley's Caribbean Kitchen. We've gathered together recipes and other information for the foods featured in the show, and now we are sharing our picnic picks with you so you can get every tasty bit out of Ainsley's Caribbean Kitchen.
Just head to our website, islandwatchpodcast.com, for our picnic picks. Another feature of each episode is for Ainsley to visit a place that demonstrates what's unique to the island. And in Grenada's case, he ends up visiting a 200-year-old spice plantation.
Yeah, I was actually surprised to hear them use that word, plantation, because it's synonymous with slavery.
I was surprised as well, but it's the wording they still use, at any rate. So Ainsley meets up with a guide who shows him how nutmeg is produced. The guide mentions nutmeg is known as black gold.
And then they break out singing the Beverly Hillbillies song, right?
Oil, that is. Black gold. Texas tea.
Not quite. The guide is explaining that nutmeg is actually the seed inside of a fruit.
It looks like an apricot, but in fact what?
Well, we refer to it as Grenada's black gold. Mm-hmm. It is the nutmeg covered by her beautiful mace. And as a child, we say, a lady in a boat with a red petticoat. What is that? It's a nutmeg covered by her beautiful mace. This part of the nutmeg is used to make jam, jellies, and the world-famous nutmeg syrup.
You're talking about just the shell?
Just the shell.
The shell.
Nothing is wasted.
Yeah.
Right. Fabulous. When we get to this part, as you can see the red bit, now this is referred to as the mace. Mm. And then we get to the creme de la creme, which is the nutmeg. And it's the only spice in the world that bears two spices at the same time.
I did not know these things about nutmeg. In fact, the only other nutmeg run-through I've ever heard is from John Legend singing his Colbert Christmas classic, Nutmeg. You can follow a link from our webpage if you want to enrich your life with that.
Okay, I don't think I know that song.
Finally, each episode winds down with a cocktail.
Yes, and to get the ingredients for it, Ainsley visits River Antoine Rum Estate, which has been in business since 1785. And still uses a centuries-old water wheel to power the crushing of the sugar cane.
It looked like a really cool place to visit. So he tastes his way through a few bottles from overproof rum, spiced rum, aged rum, and then he heads back to the beach where the sun is setting, and he makes a death by chocolate rum martini.
It's a rough life.
Yeah, at this point, he's probably ready for a getaway. We are following him now to St. Lucia, which he tags as being the only country in the world named after a woman.
The country was named by French settlers after St. Lucia of Syracuse, a Christian martyr who died in 304 CE.
Well, no arguing, because I'm much more interested in the beautiful Piton Mountains. Their volcanic spires, they're covered in green. I think I could just stare at them for the entire day, or a week. I'm not fussy.
They are very striking, like two shark's teeth jutting straight up from the shore.
Mm-hmm. And the other big draw for me on this island was the chocolate. Oh, chocolate is the main theme for Ainsley's recipes and his visit here on St. Lucia.
For me too. I mean, chocolate is pretty much my raison d'etre. And the chef he visits in this episode is doing what's likely the most daring cooking of the islands we visit. He makes a chicken dish with white chocolate mashed potatoes.
Yeah, I'd try it in the restaurant, but I don't think I could make it at home because the chocolate would get in my mouth before it ever had a chance to be in the potato.
I think that would happen to me as well. But there are some non-chocolate moments, though. Ainsley heads up the northwest coast of St. Lucia for a Friday night fish fry.
Hey mate, how you doing?
I'm good, I'm Ian.
Fantastic. Nice to meet you. Ian Ainsley, what have we got cooking here tonight?
All right, tonight we got a conch, which is called lambi in our language. This is a shellfish. We got lobster, our spiny lobsters from the Caribbean, as usual. We got
bats around the local water.
Barracuda.
Yeah,
we have barracuda. Yeah. The barracuda is bony. We have blue marlin. We use charcoal to grill. Our locally burned hood gives it a bit of flavor.
Yeah.
I would go there for sure. But easier to try at home is Ainsley's interpretation of green fig and saltfish salad, which is a traditional St. Lucian dish. Until our Trinidad and Tobago episode, the one where we visited with the musical rom-com Bazodi, I didn't know that green fig is actually a banana. So anyways, Ainsley grates these very firm, starchy green fig bananas and makes roasty out of them. And then he tops it with saltfish guacamole. Yeah, my mouth was watering.
It's a very appealing dish, and it would be a great brunch to make at home. But I think eating this there on the island would be the best.
Oh, yeah. But speaking of islands, we're leaving St. Lucia now, because Ainsley is keeping up a furious pace here.
Next stop, Dominica, which, to be clear, is not the Dominican Republic, the popular vacation spot that shares an island with Haiti.
I always get those confused, so I'm hoping this episode is going to help me clear that up.
Welcome to Dominica, the nature island, known for its black sandy beaches, lush rainforest, rivers, and mountains. This is not your typical Caribbean island with glamorous resorts. It's got a personality of its own.
Dominica lies between French-controlled Guadeloupe to the north and Martinique to the south. Oblong-shaped and slightly smaller than New York City, Dominica is 750 square kilometers. Its mountainous forest and rugged volcanic coastline make it one of the least populated countries in the world. Dominica has avoided mass tourism, and with no international airport, it remains largely unspoilt by human hands.
I'm really enjoying this trip because I'm learning more about places that are usually overlooked in favor of bigger, better-known islands.
And one of the most interesting things about Dominica is that some indigenous Caribs, whom we mentioned in our Bazodi episode as well, they're still living here. They were one of the first indigenous people to encounter Christopher Columbus. They fought off foreign invaders, including the Spanish and the French, for 2 centuries before the British conquered in 1763. And today, the Kalinago territory is a 3,700-acre district set aside for the community, and about 3,000 people live there.
Today, the descendants continue to live on this reserve, and I'm visiting a heritage village where the community share their rich cultural past and ancient traditions. Justinian Nicol is going to tell me more.
Justinian, you're the tour guide here. What an amazing place you have. Is this very much a representation of what it used to be like?
Well, originally this here, this area here was one of the original villages that the people were living on.
Okay, this is the Kalinago territory, yeah.
That's why they implement this entity as a Carib model village in the structures, the building, to give the people the idea how the people used to live.
I was fascinated by the indigenous chef demonstrating how to cook cassava bread over an open fire. I'm just recently getting acquainted with cassava. It's a starchy root that has the magical ability to bind to itself. They don't use any egg or any other ingredients. It's just the grated fresh cassava that he's cooking on an open fire. Oof.
And it looks pretty good served up with the calypso chicken that Ainsley cooks up to top the bread.
This was definitely one of the homier looking dishes. And going back to what he said at his Oxford Union talk, this is food you want to eat because it has inherent appeal. The appeal doesn't come from being cantilevered into a vertical stack or having 8 increasingly tiny dots of sauce around the rim of your plate. It may not be the one that racks up likes on your Instagram, but it's delicious and it's heartwarming.
And we get one of the series' few non-food related visits on this island, and it's to meet Elizabeth Augustine, age 104. It turns out Dominica has the highest number of centenarians per capita in the world.
I had no idea, but when I looked it up, the most recent stats are there's 27 folks over the age of 100, and that's out of a population of just over 72,000 people. So it's something to celebrate, and Ainsley does it by creating a cocktail using sorrel, also known as dried hibiscus blossoms. Sorrel drink minus the alcohol. Sorrel itself is loaded with vitamin C, it's rich in flavonoids. It's got anti-inflammatory and antioxidant properties. So this deep, beautiful pink drink is likely helping those folks make it to the ripe old age.
And now we're off to Antigua.
Why was there so much importance attached to places like Antigua, Jamaica, or, you know, these islands around the Caribbean? What were they getting from it?
Well, when you think about it, the empire is built on trade and imports and exploitation. I hate to say it, but that's the reality. All of the sugar, the cotton, the molasses, the rum, everything being grown here had a link. It all exported back to Europe and refined. And it was so successful that Jamaica alone was making more wealth for Great Britain than all 13 American colonies at the time of independence.
The guide also goes into pretty gross detail of how the British turned this beautiful, calm harbor into what amounted to a deadly industrial waste dump through hundreds of harbor workers and sailors using it as a toilet and garbage disposal.
It was a stomach-churning story. And for me, the stomach-churning continued with Ainslie's visit to Indigo Bar at the Carlisle Bay Resort. The bartender there made him a blue cocktail that he named after Ainslie. But to me, that cocktail looked like a Saniflush slush.
Actually, I thought it looked kind of cool. And Ainslie didn't seem to mind drinking it.
No. Just no. Mm-mm. I'll give it a hard pass.
Well, I would not reject a beverage just because it's blue.
Okay, well, I'll tell you what I wouldn't reject. The Scotch Bonnet Buttermilk Chicken Burger with green seasoning and tamarind mayo that Ainslie cooks down at the beach.
Oh, definitely. And after that scrumptious chicken sandwich, Ainslie heads off to learn about steel pan drums. Originally invented in and mainly identified with Trinidad and Tobago, the steel drum is important in Antigua as well. It's the only type of chromatic acoustic instrument invented in the 20th century, and it features the 12 notes of a chromatic scale on one pan.
Okay, but this is one pan that Ainslie has definitely not mastered.
No, the musician he's visiting tells him that it would be 2 years of study before he could start to play with their band.
He's being pretty nice. Anyway, it doesn't matter because we're back at the beach, it's sunset again, and Ainslie is sharing his mum's recipe for rum punch, which is based off of a well-known punch-making rhyme. Who knew?
The classic to make a rum punch is one of sour, two of sweet, three of strong, and four of weak.
So that's our whirlwind visit of the Caribbean with Ainslie Harriott. I mean, I'm not much of a cook, but I enjoyed the cooking segments of the show. I mean, the dishes look scrumptious. But what I enjoyed most were the historical and cultural segments, and I'd like to see more of that kind of thing.
He does say in the show's intro that he's dreamed about making this culinary journey all of his life. 30 years ago, this show would have been a real gem. It would have broken open new vistas for a lot of people. And it still will familiarize people with Caribbean ingredients, for example, but it's more of a pleasant diversion, I'd say, and I'm still hungry for some island watches about these smaller islands. I'm grateful they get an appearance in this show, but I'm hungry for more, just like you said, more history, more culture.
Yeah, I can't wait to visit these islands. And because I live a good island watch, I also wish there were more shows about Grenada, Dominica, St. Lucia, and Antigua. And maybe our listeners know of shows made there that they can recommend to us. If you have suggestions, send us a message in a bottle by writing islandwatchpodcast@gmail.com.
Back to Ainslie just for a moment. He definitely shows his skills in being able to think of dishes that home cooks can easily put together. And he has that easy manner in the kitchen. The recipes are easy to follow. And his ideas are, I'd say, they're aspirational and doable at the same time.
Like those chocolate drop scones with tropical fruit confetti that he made in St. Lucia.
Oh, yeah. Great example. Very jewel-worthy, but really not at all complicated. He's at ease in the kitchen, but he seems less at ease when he's meeting with local chefs, guides, and the other people he interviews. Maybe it comes from being the biggest guy in the room in voice and body, but I just wanted him to dial back a bit and give his guests the room to tell their own stories instead of sort of jollying them along. It's time for ratings. Here at Island Watch, we give each watch two different ratings. First, our island rating, which answers the question, how much of an island feel do we get from this show? Dave, what's your island rating for Ainsley's Caribbean Kitchen?
This is probably the most islandy of all the shows we've watched. We got a taste, pun intended, of the cuisine, the history, and culture of each island. And while there might have been more or less emphasis on some of those elements, the sum total is a pretty good view of island life. So I'm giving it 5 out of 5, splashing in the surf. What about you, Gemma?
Well, I'd say the island theme of Ainsley's Caribbean Kitchen is strong. Okay, it's a romp. I mean, you flit from the beach to interesting sights and unique purveyors, and then you're back to the beach again. So it's like a vacation where you're just there to turn off your brain's hardest working parts, you know, and just give over to a guy to show you highlights. And before too long, the sun is setting and you've got a cocktail in your hand. It's not a deep dive. It's definitely splashing in the surf. 5 out of 5.
We also give a star rating. Would you recommend this show to a friend? Gemma, what's your score for Ainsley's Caribbean Kitchen?
Okay, well, for people who need more history and culture, this is like a moose bouche, you know? You'll get a tiny nibble of what makes the place unique. As a cooking show, it's very gentle. There's no competition, there's no ticking timers, it's just gently lapping waves and verdant scenery. I'm giving it a 3.5 out of 5. I know cooking is not really your thing, Dave, so I'm curious if you'd recommend this show to friends.
Well, even though I'm not really into cooking, I still found the cooking segments interesting, and I got enough from the cultural and historical parts to whet my interest in learning more about these islands, and maybe going there someday. So while the show might not excel in all those categories, it's solid and watchable. 3.5 out of 5. It's time for Find the Island. With so many islands in the world, it's a challenge to choose which to visit. And with this Find the Island segment, we're learning more about islands and even discovering islands that are new to us. Maybe it will help you to choose which to visit, either in person or on a future episode of Island Watch. Here's how to play. One of us gives a series of clues, and the other tries to work out what island it is. Best of all, you can play along at home. And today, it's Gemma's turn to highlight an island.
Are you ready?
I'm ready.
Okay, this island is in the Indian Ocean and actually belongs to an East African country.
Okay, I know of a few islands at that end of the Indian Ocean, but a number of them are independent. Okay, another clue, please.
Sure, it's been continually inhabited for over 700 years, and ships traveled there from the Arabian Peninsula, India, Southeast Asia, China. They were meeting and trading gold, spices, and tragically, slaves.
Okay, so it's got quite a long history and probably a very cosmopolitan kind of culture. Okay, another clue, please.
Those are good insights. The use of cars by the public is banned, so people get around by foot or by donkey.
Well, I'm wondering if it's Zanzibar.
Interesting guess. You're in the neighborhood, but that's not what I'm looking for.
Okay. Perhaps there's a Kenyan island. What's it called? Is it called Lamu?
It is. It is Lamu. Lamu is part of Kenya. It's a county just off the northern coast of Kenya. Most people would know it best for what's called Lamu Old Town. Tourism really started developing around that town in the 1970s, mainly because of the gorgeous 18th century Swahili architecture. In 2001, Lamu Old Town became a UNESCO World Heritage Center.
That sounds neat. And what else is there, though, that makes it special to get that designation?
Well, the description I read said it's that the Lamu Old Town is built out of coral, stone, and mangrove timbers. So it sounds like something out of a fairy tale to a person not from an island. It's got narrow, winding streets. There are inner courtyards, verandas, very elaborately carved wooden doors. And The building style is a blend of Swahili, Arabic, Persian, Indian, and European influences.
Interesting. Yeah, sounds cool. And you said that there are no cars allowed. That kind of reminds me of Catalina Island, which we featured a few episodes back.
Right. There was another transportation option, motorcycle taxis, known in East Africa as Boda Boda, but they were banned.
Was that recently?
Yeah, it was just in 2018, actually, because the pollution they caused got UNESCO's attention, and Lamu was threatened with being removed from the list. Actually, Lamu has bigger fish to fry these days, though.
How do you mean?
Well, Kenya and neighboring country Somalia are in a long-term dispute over their maritime border. In 2014, Somalia asked the UN's International Court of Justice for a ruling, but according to Africa News, Kenyan representatives are refusing to take part in the hearings and things have deadlocked.
So how is that affecting Lamu?
The islanders are basically caught in the middle. They've lost a lot of income when COVID choked off tourism, and now they're at risk of losing fishing rights as well, which would be an enormous economic hit. There is a movement, hashtag Save Lamu, that's L-A-M-U. As their spokesperson Isaac Abubakar noted, the people of Lamu and our brothers in Somalia have coexisted for centuries and continue to consider the current boundaries simply as colonial lines, drawn neither to the interest of Kenya or the Somali people.
Well, it sounds like a serious situation.
It's not all that's going on there. Huge changes, and I mean physically enormous, have come to the island with a $25 billion mega project known as LAPSET, which stands for Lamu Port South Sudan Ethiopia Transit Corridor. It includes roads, railways, oil pipelines from Lamu across North Kenya to Ethiopia, South Sudan, and Uganda. The site for this LAPSET is just 16 kilometers north of Lamu Old Town, and there'll be a 32-berth container port, the biggest on Africa's eastern seaboard. There are plans for an oil refinery, a coal power plant, a Las Vegas-style resort city, and an international airport also on the table.
In other words, Lamu will never be the same again.
Well, Caribbean Archipelago and Lamu, what a trip. We're headed back on board now and setting sail for another port. We've even got a few clues to our next destination.
We'll be visiting more than one island. In fact, where we're going, there are thousands and thousands of islands.
Sounds like we're trying to outdo ourselves every episode. Okay. Many of the islands in the area we're going had a fiery birth, the result of volcanic activity.
And many people think of this part of the world as a paradise on Earth.
To see if you've guessed our destination, head to our website at islandwatchpodcast.com. Bonus, you'll also see what show we'll use to travel there.
Tune in next time for another great Island Watch adventure.
In the meantime, tell your friends about us.
Follow us at Island Watch Cast on Twitter.
Our email address is islandwatchpodcast@gmail.com.
And visit our website at islandwatchpodcast.com for show notes and more, like the answer to the big question, where does the good ship Island Watch sail to next?
Fair winds and calm seas.
This has been a production of
Phosphine League.
Phosphine League.
Phosphine League.
Phosphine League.
Huh?
Ah, Grenada. It's such a special island with lovely people and delicious food. It certainly spiced up my life.
Cheers.